Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. We're about to have a conversation with Rich Benjamin, who was on our show last week to talk about Trayvon Martin and what gated communities say about that from the piece he wrote in the Times. He was with us a couple years ago to talk about his book, Whitetopia. Back to that again during our fun drive, because it's gotten more complex since he's written the book, I think. The book is, of course, Searching for Whitetopia, An Improbable Journey to the Heart of White America. And Rich Benjamin, welcome. Good to have you back.
Hi, Mark. Glad to be here.
And thank you very much for offering to do this during the fun drive to help WEAA.
I'm glad to do it.
So we want you all to call 410-319-8888, by the way. And if you make a pledge of $100 or more, you can get a copy of this incredible book. And you'll hear us talking about it now and read pieces of the book as we do it. So, Rich, one of the things that that really struck me, struck anybody who reads this book, is just how you did this. I mean, you did it in such an open way. I mean, a black man walking into all white worlds, no other black folks around but you, and even had pleasant welcomings in spite of it.
Yes, I really tried to be open because I didn't want to do some armchair sociology where I said, oh, this is the future of white America, and be seated in an armchair in New York. So I really wanted to take the 2 years. I traveled the 27,000 miles. And as you say, I just went from communities, lived there for 3-4 months a pop, and just got to know folks and really integrate myself into those neighborhoods.
So to speak.
Yeah, so to speak.
So you went to St. George, the places you stayed, St. George, Utah, Forsyth, Georgia, and Warren County, New Jersey. So describe for our listeners what a Whitetopia is. What is it? What are the traits? What defines a Whitetopia?
Okay, well, a Whitetopia has three qualities. The first is that it is a town or a county that it's whiter than the country, and at present the country is 69% non-Hispanic white. It's whiter than its respective region, and a Whitetopia is growing. And a final quality of a Whitetopia is that it has a pleasant look or feel. It has this charm to its residents that is often hard to describe. So if you take, for example, Scranton, Pennsylvania, that's 95% white, but that's not a Whitetopia, A, because it's not growing, and B, because many of its residents may not call it charming.
But now one of the things that these traits, there was some right-wing really media that I read reviewing your book that took real umbrage of some of the things that you did.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, Mark. Well, it's fascinating. There are two things. There is some umbrage.
Yeah.
But I'm getting secret emails from right-wingers saying that I am talking about issues that are too volatile for the soft right, quote-unquote, and the left to touch. And they're like, yeah, of course we think about, you know, white-only places, but we're surprised someone's actually talking about them.
Well, I mean, there's a very telling definition in your book, and I'm going to just throw it out here so we can talk about it in a minute, if that's okay. If there are pieces you want to, that you think our listeners need to hear, please pick them out and read them. But let me just read this, and we'll talk about it.
Sure.
From the book Whitetopia, Searching for Whitetopia, you write, most whites are drawn to a place explicitly because it teems with other white people. Rather, the place's very whiteness implies other perceived qualities. Americans associate a homogeneous white neighborhood with higher property values, friendliness, orderliness, hospitality, hospitality, cleanliness, safety, and comfort. These seemingly race-neutral qualities are subconsciously inseparable from race and class in many whites' minds. Race is often used as a proxy for those neighborhood traits, and if a neighborhood is known to have those traits, many whites presume, without giving it any thought, that the neighborhood will be majority white.
Yeah.
That's the complexity of it.
That's the complexity. So, like I said, you know, in terms of going golfing and hunting and fishing in these Whitetopias, many folks living there were extremely friendly. And it's not often that they said, oh, I don't want to be near the Latinos. I don't want to be near the blacks. In fact, they were moving to Whitetopia without giving race a second thought. And what drove them to Whitetopia, the comfort, the parks, the sense of perceived safety, the biking trails, they often associate those qualities with whiteness in and of itself. And by the way, after I wrote that piece, academics did this study, and then they videotaped two neighborhoods, rather they videotaped the same neighborhood, and they populated one of the video clip with people of color and then the other video clip with white people, and they showed it to unsuspecting residents, and they asked which of these two neighborhoods has the higher property values, and invariably the quote-unquote whiter neighborhood was assumed to have higher property values. So without anyone being mean or negative or racist, we often associate white neighborhoods with higher property values.
So why do you think that you were not met with either derision or nervousness when people met you in their neighborhoods? I mean, often, at least back in the 60s, the 50s, the 70s, when somebody black moved into an all-white neighborhood, even for a minute, it meant put up for sale signs and run.
Yeah, because we live in a different country. A lot has improved and gotten better since the, my parents' generation, since the 1960s. And so I think this country has a lot to be proud about, so that I feel, or it's my experience, that one-on-one race relations have dramatically improved since the 70s. But that's one of the interesting conundrums of the book, is that while one-on-one race relations have improved dramatically since the 70s, this country is as segregated educationally and racially today as it was in 1970.
And something is different about these neighborhoods you're talking about, because this, in some ways, different than people running from their neighborhoods in the 1950s and 60s, or having blockbusters come in and kind of destroying neighborhoods and playing that whole racial game to change neighborhoods and resegregate them. This is something where people are making conscious decisions. It's almost, there's some people who you would describe in your book as kind of refugees from diversity, people who kind of, there's a mindset I've read, and it's in your book, but also in critiques of the book that people have written, that what you call Whitetopia, they would say, well, that's just white America. That is America.
Yes, yes, yes. And in many cases, people living in Whitetopia are refugees of diversity. And by that I mean is they'll literally tell me, the community I used to live in, i.e. Phoenix, Arizona, i.e. L.A., became too multicultural, too quote-unquote crime-ridden, and I no longer recognize the community I once grew up in. People literally say that. I all the Spanish language signs, all the hearing of Spanish, you know, the schools tipped and became more brown and black. And so they say, you know, we no longer recognize the communities we grew up in. And so in that sense, those people are definitely refugees of diversity.
So how many of these places do we have in America? You write about that in the book, the number of places you can call Whitetopias.
Well, in the back of the book is an appendix, and in the appendix, Mark, there are 345 counties in this. No, I mean there are 3,000 counties in this country, and then I literally list every last county in America that qualifies as Whitetopia. And I kind of got worried, because I worried that like white supremacists or white separatists would use my book as a moving guide. And they would advertise it and say, hey, folks, you know, this is like the best places to live. You know, this guy did all of the research for us. He tells us the whitest places in America.
So we're about to take a short break. Come right back with Rich Benjamin and Whitetopia and talk more about what he discovered in America. The bass man is sitting here in the studio. That must mean something. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I'm here with Rich Benjamin talking about his incredible book, Searching for Whitetopia, An Improbable Journey to the Heart of White America. You can also check his work out at richbenjamin.com, and there's really tons of stuff there as well. So, Rich, one of the things that I'd like to explore some of the stuff that really is out of this book that I think that it comes to the heart of some things. I mean, there's a woman that you interviewed from Southern California. She said she moved to St. George to be with the Republicans, to be with her kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, and So that's a motivation that doesn't say I'm running away from black folks or Latinos. But there's a subtext to it that people didn't want to talk about, I think.
Yeah, and absolutely. Race has become a subtext for other, quote-unquote, non-racial issues, i.e. healthcare spending,
right.
i.e. immigration, i.e. taxes. And the subtext of all this is, I don't want my money going wasted on minorities. And it's become very blatant, because now that we saw the Tea Party movement, now that we saw the anti-immigration movement, now that we saw the anti-quote-unquote Obamacare movement, you know, people are shouting, we want to take our country back. So the question becomes, take it back from what? And so all of these issues are interlooped.
Because for you, it's part of what you describe, and the conversation in the book, is the difference between patriotic America and post-American.
Yeah. That was an interesting division in this country that came up on me. And I first began to think and write about it when Sarah Palin traveled to the small, predominantly white communities throughout the country, and she literally said, quote, this is real America.
Mm-hmm.
You are the patriots who keep this country humming. And that's part of this mythology I'm talking about, that there's this real, quote-unquote, patriot America that keeps this country working, and then there's the foreigners, the traders, and the freeloaders who are freeloading off the public welfare. And after Whitetopia, Newt Gingrich comes out and says, Obama is the food stamp president. Now, of course, in a recession, food stamp usage always goes up, but so does Medicaid. Why didn't Newt Gingrich call Obama the Medicaid president? Because Medicaid isn't racialized the same way that food stamps are. So a lot of what I'm discovering in Whitetopia, or what I discovered in my journey, really flared its head in ugly ways in subsequent political campaigns.
And I'm going to come back to the politics of this and where you see the future going, because Whitetopia plays a critical role. It played a critical role in the election of Barack Obama and will play a critical role in the elections to come, and you're at the way you end the book, you kind of set that up for us, which I'm going to come to in a minute. But take us to this meeting that you had with the white supremacist movement. Take us to that moment.
Well, Mark, I discovered many months living in Idaho, specifically the North Panhandle of Idaho, I discovered that I was fairly near a sect, a Christian identity sect, which is the religious arm of neo-Nazis. It's the religious arm of Aryan Nations. And I discovered that they were having a 3-day retreat. So I crashed the retreat. You know, I just wanted to see, you know, what they were going to say, what they were talking about, you know, what the hullabaloo was. And I am the only non-Aryan journalist to do that.
First of all, I have to ask you this question. Before you jump in and describe what happened in that compound, how did you get the heart to do that, to walk into that?
Well, the thing is, this is anthropology and journalism. By
right.
the time I had done that, I felt like I had the lay of the land. Like, I had Idaho plates. I had a pickup truck. I had been to the gun club. Perhaps I was a recognized entity at the shooting range, and you know, I was just straightforward and polite, and I did it.
Uh-huh. So here you are, and there you were. So tell us the story.
Well, it was very interesting. I got a lot of odd stares, as you can imagine. Some people were curious what an outsider was doing, and you know, I told them. And I heard a lot of bizarre conversations. Like, one guy came up to me to reassure me. He said, you know what? We are separatists. We are not supremacists. We don't think we're better than you. We just want to be away from you. And so they made for me the distinction between a separatist and a supremacist. Another peculiar conversation I had is a guy started ragging on David Duke, David Duke being the former Klan leader who ran for national office, including the Louisiana Senate. And he said, you know, David Duke talks a big game. You know, we white nationalists, we have to start having a lot of kids. And David Duke talks a big game, but he himself only has 2 kids.
Just has 2 kids.
So, I mean, that's the type of conversation I had. It felt like the Twilight Zone.
So one of the... One of the things that I think that is important here is that when you look at this, and you look at Whitetopia, one of the things I thought about is our tendency in America to self-segregate. I mean, here we have a portion of white Americans who run off to live in communities. Essentially, we'll talk about in a minute, to get away from crime, and they say crime and for better schools, and to feel more comfortable and safe. But we do have a tendency, we're, for different reasons, you know, like in Prince George's County, Atlanta, Georgia, there are a lot of gay to black communities.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I'm so not a big fan of this trend, Mark. And the reason being is that self-segregation perpetuates this vicious cycle where like-minded people start surrounding themselves by like-minded people, and this closes out differences, learning, and growth. And I don't want to sound all willy-nilly and fuzzy and kumbaya, but I'll give you a critical. I know, but it's true. I'll give you a critical example: is that, you know, this is part of the reason our politics has become so divisive. And like you said, they're liberal enclaves. And it's a problem if liberals are getting all of their opinions, all of their news, all of their information, all of their conversation from like-minded people who already agree with them. And there's now people are pointing out the Facebook effect, that if you, in fact, you're also online only with like-minded people, then it also really solidifies and cements your narrow thinking. So, you know, this happens in Whitetopia, but like you pointed out, it also happens in liberal communities.
And it's, in some senses, on one level, it's similar things driving people, whether it's fear and distrust or feeling more comfortable with your own. Right? I mean, that's the...
Yeah, but those aren't two separate things. In other words, you feel comfortable with your own because you fear and distrust others.
Right. And so... I'm just curious if you had the conversations about Whitetopia in majority black or Latino communities who might be doing the same thing for different reasons. Have you had those conversations?
Yeah, but I mean, to be fair, let's take Latino immigrants, for example.
Right.
So Latino immigrants are often segregated among themselves, not by choice, but because of language barriers, because you have pathways and gateways and family networks that lead to immigration. And so oftentimes it's not an exact analogy. A Whitetopia isn't the same thing as a barrio, because
right.
In a barrio people are not there by choice. They're there because the path breakers who started immigrating there could provide jobs and opportunities. And so we can't always say that, you know, these communities are equal and they're similar, because they're not. They're very different reasons why you can have a predominantly Latino neighborhood versus a predominantly white neighborhood.
We're going to take a very brief break and come back with Rich Benjamin. And when we do, we're going to take a look at what this Whitetopia, what effect it might have on Barack Obama, what effect it did have in the last election, a complex effect, and where maybe taking America in its future. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're about to bring you a conversation about your station. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are here with Rich Benjamin. He is the author of the book Searching for Whitetopia, An Improbable Journey to the Heart of White America. He's a journalist, a multimedia journalist, and a scholar from the Devos, and has written this powerful book. Number here is 410-319-8888. Now, Rich, in part of the book, you talk about... let me just read another piece of this book. We won't say what part of the book it's in, but I just want to read it anyway.
Okay.
As more voters decamp to the outer suburbs and exurbs, those places command premium attention from politicians as vote-rich target environments perceived to be competitive. White voters in the emerging suburbs and exurbs, strategists believe, hold the key to future general elections. The rest of America, beware. Politics in Whitetopia may transform its voters' hobby horses, school choice, taxpayer and private property rights, gated communities, and quote-unquote colorblind indifference into sacred cows. It's a little bit of what you said in the piece you just wrote in the New York Times, but this is part of where you see the body politic of America emerging.
Very much so. The recession changes that a little bit, but not much. I believe what we're going to see in this election is the ability of white suburbanites and exurbanites, particularly in swing states, in Ohio, in Florida, in Colorado, in Virginia, in North Carolina, tip the election, and all the politicians are going to be rushing to cater to that mentality and those interests.
So, what do you think? Let's go back to 2008 in the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And you lived in these communities, some of which, these Whitetopias, actually voted for Barack Obama. Many did not. Talk about what that meant then, and why that divide existed.
Well, it's fascinating, because if America were exclusively white, John McCain would be president, because John McCain handily beat Barack Obama among white voters.
57%.
And yes, yes. Now, that's often the case. I mean, the Democratic Party hasn't won the majority of white votes since 1964 with LBJ. So that's not necessarily a race issue. You know, Al Gore lost the white vote. Bill Clinton lost the white vote. All Democrats since 1964 have lost the white vote. John Kerry lost the white vote. So that's not particular to Barack Obama. I should mention, though, even though we had two wars in 2008, we had a tanking economy, and George Bush was the least popular president in the history of polling at that point, John McCain still won Whitetopian counties. And as you pointed out before, I literally segment each county that qualifies as a Whitetopia, and John McCain won the majority of those counties by significant, significant margins. Now, the fascinating thing is there are lefty Whitetopias. I mean, there are counties in Colorado, for example.
Like Louisville. Was it Louisville, Colorado?
Louisville, Colorado.
Right.
That's pro-Barack Obama. Boulder County, where you have Boulder, Colorado, and the University of Colorado, that's a Whitetopia that Barack Obama won. So not all Whitetopias are conservative. You have left-leaning, hardcore Democratic Whitetopias also, but they're in the minority.
So what does it say? What has this all said to you about the where the issues of race and conservative politics, or race and politics, meet and intertwine?
Well, it says a lot. So, for example, my friend, by the way, he's from Sweden. He's covering the Republican primary for the largest newspaper, the most prestigious newspaper in Sweden. So he followed Newt Gingrich when Newt Gingrich was ahead. And he said his jaw dropped at what came out of Newt Gingrich's mouth in Republican Whitetopian counties. And like I said, it's the food stamp president, the food stamp president. Nobody's calling Barack Obama the Medicaid president. They're calling him the food stamp president. And so with immigration, with taxes, with healthcare spending, with quote-unquote Obamacare, these issues often have a racial subtext. And so each party has to run wisely according to what its goals are. And, yeah, Barack Obama, we'll see whether he tacks to the left, the center, or the right in his re-election campaign.
Well, I mean, one of the things about, as I look at the list of the 10 states containing the most Whitetopias, I'm looking on your website right now, many of those states are either southern states, where like in Cobb County, many Whitetopias were built outside of Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
Or they're in states that are majority white, right?
No, not really. For example, Georgia is a very diverse state, and you
right.
have Whitetopias. Other examples. Missouri is a very diverse state. You have Whitetopias. Tennessee is a very diverse state, and you have Whitetopias. And Texas and Virginia and on. So you do have a lot of multiracial states which have Whitetopian enclaves.
So at the heart of it, what do you think Whitetopia means to its residents? At the heart of it for them.
At the heart of it, I think for some people, it's explicitly a Whitetopia. It's explicitly a haven from all the messiness of the future, you know, particularly the diversity and the immigration. And for other folks, they're just drawn there. They're just trying to raise their families the best they can. They're drawn to the bike trails and the natural amenities in the lakes and the mountains, or they're drawn to the public school system, or they're drawn to the perceived sense of safety. It's a push-pull effect. You're pushed from your former environment and you're pulled into this environment. And for some people, it's explicitly racial reasons, and they'll say so to my face. And for other people, it's non-racial reasons.
So what was it like to have some things said to your face?
Sometimes it's comic because, you know, you just learn. You know, sometimes like you walk into a predominantly, but let's be real. It's an entirely white environment except for
right.
you. And you feel like that Clarabel Cow cartoon where Clarabel Cow walks into a saloon full of chickens and then the chickens try and pretend and notice she's not a cow. So you get some of that. But, it's not my job to have feelings. It's not my job to respond to how do people respond to me. I'm just trying to learn. So if something negative gets said to me, like, it's kind of irrelevant.
And what was it in the very beginning, Rich, that pushed you to do this story? I mean, this is something, I mean, people like as you, there's something that really drives them to have to go out and tell a story you think needs to be told.
Yeah. I mean, the trend started to fascinate me. I came across statistics that showed the fastest growing small towns. And I just looked at them and I said, these towns are very white. These towns tend to make the best places to live lists, and you know those lists. They pop up at you on Yahoo or CNN.com, you know, best place to live. And
right.
then they're already white, and they're already growing. I just wanted to know what's going on. But I wanted to know what's going on in the context of 2042. That is a date that's making headlines. And
yes.
as you probably know, by 2042, white people are scheduled to no longer be the American majority. So that interesting irony said, you know, I just have to go there myself and see what's going on.
And that 2042 mark is something I'm going to pick up on when we come back from this very brief break again to talk about our station. We want to look at the future. We want to tell some of the personal stories that happened to Rich Benjamin in his journey searching for Whitetopia. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Rich Benjamin. Right now, we're about to talk about your public radio station, WEAA. Welcome back. We're here with Rich Benjamin. Richard Benjamin, of course, wrote the book Searching for Whitetopia, An Improbable Journey to the Heart of America. He's at richbenjamin.com as well, and joins us here to talk about his book and to help us during this fun drive at 410-319-8888. And Rich, so where we leave off, I mean, this is, I keep thinking about the people you met in this book, and when you, this is really a difficult but important thing to talk about, which is that many of the people you met in the book, despite what they may feel, not politically, but racially, the subtext of your conversations, were decent people and good-hearted people and open people. And it's the complexity of existence that I kept pulling out of your book. Every time I heard you, I read your interactions with the folks in these Whitetopias.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. And a lot of the book, you know, it's a ride, you know. So, you know, we'll hear about, you know, just fishing with these people or playing poker. In St. George, Utah, for example, we had a weekly poker crew just playing poker, you know, in the golfing. And so a lot of this, just submerging yourself in these communities, it's a lot of social activity. I had a lot of dinner parties. I had a lot of folks over to my house for dinner. I got a lot of invitations. The one invitation I declined in 2 years researching Whitetopia, the one invitation I declined is when this young couple invited me to go rodeoing, and I did not want to be out rodeoed by their 6 and 8 year old daughters. who were literally like rodeo champions. So that I declined. That I wasn't having. But literally, every other, in all seriousness, every other invitation to dinner, to golf, to play poker, to do many things, I accepted over those 2 years. And, you know, that's how you learn.
Now, how many people did you run into and talk to that that kind of took umbrage at the racist undertones or even overtones of the communities you lived in?
That's an excellent question. No one has ever asked me that. And I think the instances where people who live in that community and still live in that community took umbrage at the racist undertones, that happened to be at either Democratic Party meetings or Episcopal Church meetings or Methodist Church meetings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't want to draw any conclusions from that, but that would happen. So, for example, you know, I made it a point to go to, you know, the Republican County dinners and the Republican County early breakfast. I became an early riser, by the way. You know, these Republican groups, some of them would meet at 7:30 a.m. before they headed off to work. So, but I would also in turn also go to the Democratic County meetings, and sometimes the Democrats or the Episcopals or the Methodists would call out the community and say, hey, you know, this meeting about immigration was racist, or hey, you know, the fact that the Minutemen are marching on our town square is racist, on and on. So that's when the umbrage or the counterpunch would happen.
So what do you think this I mean, what do you think this portends for America? I want to know what your kind of, as you sit back and think about maybe the people you still stay in touch with from the book Searching for Whitetopia, and you think about where we're going, not just in terms of this election with Barack Obama and Mitt Romney in 2012, but what does it say about what we're setting up? Where do you think we're going? What is your sense of where we're becoming?
Well, I think we need to unite. And that might sound obvious, but it's not. When we have these divisive debates about deficit reduction, about public spending, about public schools, about healthcare reform, we cannot be divided unto this false mentality where people feel like they're working hard and they're paying taxes and they're quote-unquote supporting freeloaders. That's just not the case. When you take diverse municipalities and cities from California to New York to New Jersey to Connecticut, they are paying more in taxes than these Whitetopian states like Utah and North Dakota and Idaho. In other words, the Utahs, the North Dakotas, the Idahos, and many of these Whitetopian states and counties receive more in federal tax money than they give.
Right.
So anyway, the point being, what does this portend? The portend is that we got to put a stop to these debates where every time we spend money, whether it's on food stamps, whether it's on immigration, whether it's on defense, whether it's on our collective health care, we have to stop dividing it according to haves and have-nots, which sometimes, and not always, is racialized. And by the way, the problem is, what we're seeing with Occupy Wall Street, the problem is that never in our recent memory has so much wealth, so much power been concentrated in so few people's hands. And so that's also part of this class division that people are getting fed up with. And so that's, you know, we got to think about and confront these issues head on, or we may be screwed come 2042.
Do you have an idea of going back to these communities for like a second round to see where America is?
Well, I've been back because I was invited in a couple of the communities to do book readings. And I'll tell you, the funniest thing is there is a woman, she says she'll tell her, Mark, she'll get on this show and tell you to your face. She'll say, Mark, I am to the right of Newt Gingrich. I am to the right of George Bush. She'll tell you that to her face. And she said, Richard, she said, thank you for profiling me accurately. Thank you for quoting my statements accurately. But my gripe with you is that you misquoted my age. She said, I am 2 years younger than you said I was. I said, not according to public record. And I stood my ground. But in all seriousness, I mean, that's what happens. You return to these communities and people will say, okay, thank you, you got us right. And, or, you know, that kind of thing. So I've been back already.
So it might be fun. We have to take a break here. I want to thank you for being with us today, and maybe it'd be fun one day if we can put together a show with you and some of the folks you met.
Sure.
I'd love that.
Okay, Mark, good luck with your drive, man, and thanks for your show.
And thank you so much for being with us today, man. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Rich Benjamin,
All
Searching
right.
for Whitetopia, an improbable journey to the heart of white America. Stay with us.